19 years old when I got into the Big 12. Just kidding. No, not even.
As much as people tell us it helps them, it's helping that we're getting so much out of it as well. So, yeah.
I love being able to call John O'Neill and talk to him.
Losers have excuses and winners have programs. So I figured that I'd just call it a...
I've heard it said that a referee can make up to 7 decisions per play.
Let's just get right to the news.
And I have never known 10-2-5-A-1 better than I do right now. Thank you.
A genuine love of football that came from my dad. I don't know how close this episode will air to Father's Day, but how about a shout out to all the dads out there?
Hey, Dwayne.
What's up, Tyler?
Looking out the window today. The window's, I got the shades down.
Oh, man, it's so gorgeous out.
It is. It was like, almost, somebody told me yesterday.
Yeah.
It was like 79 degrees at SeaTac.
Really?
I always call them BS, but I mean, I didn't do any research, but
it was pretty warm. I have shorts on today and a t-shirt, so today is it's got to be 70 plus.
Yes, it's very nice out. That's for sure.
Make up for that snow.
Yeah, right.
Right, spring is here.
It's here. Grass is growing.
It is growing. So...
Welcome to everyone.
Yeah, welcome. Welcome to another conversation. And as always, thank you for listening. We, you know, we're doing it for you. So if you're not listening, we're not doing it.
We're not doing it good.
For nothing. Right. But I know a lot of you are listening and are eagerly awaiting the next episode when it comes out. So we love that. And also, thank you to our patrons. They keep trickling in.
They do.
So that's an extra special thanks because that's people who are like putting money
right
kind of behind us. So
it's nice to get that.
It is nice,
and it helps. It helps pay some bills. So
exactly,
and that's realistically what we're just looking to try and do is pay the bills and keep this overhead low.
Yeah, exactly.
And keep rocking and rolling. So,
how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah.
Weird week, schedule wise, as you know. But when we were talking about your travel plans coming up, I think I said Thursday, right?
Yeah.
And you said, yeah, tomorrow. I'm like, oh, okay, that's right. I forgot what day it is. So
yeah, early morning.
But things are fine. It's all good. The sun's out, so that's it's always nice to come home and play outside a little bit. So how about you?
I'm good. About the same. Like I said, you said I'm traveling tomorrow down to San Francisco. Other than that, getting the work done on my house.
Yeah, that's getting close.
So that's getting close to being done. Be glad.
Nice.
The dogs will be glad when that's over with. So they can get out the house some more.
Right. You're kind of cooped up with the people working outside.
Yeah.
There's a lot of emails that have been coming in the last 5 days.
We might skip just because we have a lot to talk about this episode today.
So,
and maybe we'll read a couple the next time.
But keep them coming.
Keep them coming.
But also, we'd like to ask.
Please. When you send us a tell us where you're from.
Yes, please.
Sometimes we'll read these emails. It's like, oh, I wonder where this guy's from, and.
Or a gal. Yeah, because we've had a couple. So just let us know where you're from. It's always interesting. We like to know. It's cool.
Yeah. Sometime I'll reach back out and say, hey, where are you from? But let us know.
And
the survey?
Yeah.
Are you going to say something else?
Well, I say Dwayne does a great job of replying to everyone. So just keep them coming.
Keep them coming, please. So.
Survey.
Survey. Yes, we sent the survey out earlier last week, I guess.
Yep.
And then by the time you hear this, and a lot of you have responded, which is great. Mm-hmm. So by the time you hear this, we'll take the survey down. So thank you all who responded. We're getting a lot of
good feedback.
So
just trying to make some educated decisions.
Exactly.
For the future, and that helps. So that's great. So with that, you want to do the weekly play scenario?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, you want to read it this time?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's 3rd and 7 at the B27. Okay. So going in. A85, receiver catches a pass at the B10 and runs to the B4 where he fumbles. The loose ball bounces into the pylon. Mm-hmm. Just prior to the pass, B77 is flagged for a personal foul, hands to the face at the line of scrimmage.
Okay.
That is it. So, we start with the result of the play.
Touchback.
The result of the play is a touchback. What's next?
Are there any fouls?
Any fouls?
Or violations? Yes.
What do we have?
We have a defensive personal foul.
We have a defense
for hands to the face,
yes,
on number B77.
Yep. And so what is the basic spot here? Like during what play segment did the foul happen?
During the pass play.
During a pass play.
Mm-hmm.
So normally it's 3-1. Right?
Previous spot.
That's previous spot.
Normally.
Yeah, because that's not 3-1, but that's just
the basic spot
for pass plays.
Right. But
this is a special rule, right?
Yes.
So what do we enforce this from? What does the language say?
The language says this, and I'm going to paraphrase it.
Yeah.
Right? So during a down with a legal forward pass play and there's a personal foul by the defense or team B or the opponent, I can't remember how that's worded, the personal foul can be enforced from the end of the last run if there is no change of team possession during the down. If the result is a change of team possession, then the penalty is enforced from the previous spot with the down repeated.
Correct.
Something of that effect.
That is correct. So this one, mm-hmm, where would we enforce it from then?
Well, this is where you got to know every little little language word, right?
Yeah.
So because this is a tricky one. It got me on a clinic test like 2 or 3 years ago. Because we have a change of team possession, kind of technically, but we don't have physical possession of the football by team B.
Right.
So, because we are going to award them, here's that word again, we're going to award them the ball at the 20-yard line or the succeeding spot for a touchback after the fact.
Correct.
So they never got the ball.
Right.
They might, but they didn't ever have it. So we're going to go from the end of the last run, like we just stated, from the 4 to the 2.
Yes.
Game clock?
Game clock is on the snap.
Oh, why's that?
Because of the result of the play.
There we go. So
the result of the play doesn't matter here.
Yes.
For the clock status.
That's correct.
But, yeah.
Good one.
Yeah. So, a lot of things to piece together.
Yes.
If you have any questions, email us. We'll kind of go into more detail, but
you bet.
That's a tricky one if you see it on the test.
Yep. Good one. Good one. Okay. So, today's show, we're going to talk with the crew,
yes,
from a documentary, mm-hmm, that's called Her Turf.
Her Turf, yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This should be very fun. We've been trying to find something like this for a while to talk with. So, we're going to leave that.
Yeah.
We're going to let that soak.
Shortly.
But now I'd like you to tell us what the quote of the week is.
The quote of the week is from Benjamin Franklin. I think he's on
who's that?
Dollar bill or something, maybe. It says, by failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of
short and sweet.
Yes.
But how true is that?
It's really true. Yeah. If you've
ever been in a situation where you have something important coming up and you know that you should put some more effort into the preparation, but you kind of just put it to the side,
mm-hmm,
and the day of the event,
yeah,
something occurs that brings you right back like, God, I should have prepared harder.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really good, simply, shortly put.
Exactly.
Okay.
Love it. All right.
So give us a couple seconds and we'll chat with Her Turf.
I didn't know women could be football officials. Like that didn't even cross my mind that we could be a football official.
Women have to work harder because you're still in a male organization. They still don't think you belong there. They still don't think you can officiate.
We just want to be respected as officials. not great woman officials. We want to be respected as officials. And we have to bring ourselves up to a higher level. We have to have our own standard on top of the standard that they give us.
Okay, today's guest, we're going to talk with the crew from a new documentary called Her Turf. So Dwayne and I have been talking really over the last year and a half about locating a female football official to talk to.
Yes.
We reached out to a few in the past, but not a lot of luck.
Yeah, and then we're kind of getting started and they're probably like, who the heck are those guys?
Yeah. So. And then I stumbled across this on Twitter recently, mm-hmm. and I sent it to Dwayne. And I says, this is it.
Yes.
And it's also March, which is Women's History Month.
Yes.
And we were like, this is a match made in heaven. So let's reach out to these people and see what we can do. So that's what we did. And so today we're excited to talk to Anise Kennedy. She's a cast member. Chantel Hansen. She's the director and the producer. Yes. And the executive producer, Dean Blandino. So we're really excited to talk to these folks and have them promote this a little bit and tell us about the journey and everything around it. So with that, let's start with Chantel, if you would please.
Yeah.
And just tell us where this kind of started and how it became not just a vision, but an actual production.
Well, first off, I just want to say thank you so much for having us on. We just really appreciate your taking the time to interview us and learn more about Her Turf. And Her Turf is a short documentary about three women football officials breaking down gender barriers on the line of scrimmage.
Dean, could you talk, you know, we all know you from the National Director of Replay, but can you talk about your role in this documentary?
Yeah, this was something Chantel had reached out and we kind of connected. You know, I've known Anise for a long time, and you know, from my time with the NFL, and these being a scout and a pioneer in officiating, it just was something that I was very, very interested in, something that we were really passionate about during my time at the NFL, and just trying to create a sustainable pipeline of female officials and help women get involved in officiating and move. You know, move up the ranks and to whatever their goals were, you know, whether that was the NFL or just to officiate in high school or Division II, Division III, whatever it was. And so, you know, through Anise, Chantel and I connected and shared a similar passion, and it just went from there.
And Anise, one of the stars of the show, what about something you can share with us?
Well, basically, by being the first female to officiate, starting with the NC2A, a door opened. Just as Dean said, when I started, that's how I met Dean, being introduced to NFL people going inside, starting working a coach-to-play operator inside of the NFL. So I had the privilege of meeting Dean. And then from there, you know, as years went on, and I'm me being the only female for 8 years on a field.
Yeah.
Which is one of the biggest blessings I can even imagine, you know, but
that's great.
Being connected with the pipeline, right pipeline, has been totally a blessing here.
That's awesome. Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about your story because it's very interesting. But Chantel, could you give us an overview of what Her Turf is about and kind of the cast and
as a first time director producer, I definitely picked an interesting subject matter to film. You know, I was really inspired just to learn more about what it's like to be an official and on and off the field. And what happened was I first started doing research in pre-production. And I found out and realized this really hasn't been filmed before. And that really surprised me, because to me, this seems like such an obvious subject matter. And because I was just so curious to learn more, that I really started reading everything I could get my hands on. And that included the Referee magazine. And so I would read that all the time, which was pretty interesting. And a lot of my colleagues and friends kind of gave me a hard time about that. Then I read an article about Cindy C. Wilson, and I just found her so interesting because she's a volleyball official Hall of Famer. And I got on the phone with her one day, and she's telling me all about this sports officiating summit. She's like, you got to come, Chantel. You just got to come. So I bought a ticket, and I just showed up, and it was just, I was blown away when I went to the Sports Officiating Summit. And this was back in 2015. This is really, really back in the pre-production phase, where I just wanted to immerse myself into everything I could about officiating. And I just, it was just a fascinating culture that I just knew there was something really special about it, and that I knew I was going to somehow film somebody, some officials. And when I walked away from that summit, I was really surprised that there weren't that many women doing it, but the women that were doing it have been doing it for decades. And that's for me where the story was finding out who these women are, why they do it, and how they continue to break down the barriers.
It's amazing. We see evidence of that because, you know, we go to camps and clinics around the country. Yep. And also in our own conference, mm-hmm. there in the one conference I work in, there's no female officials. And then in the GNAC, there's only one. Mm-hmm. And not really any in the pipeline. So it's a great story to get out there.
And how I ended up, you know, when I went to the Sports Officiating Summit, I promised myself I would be really open to film any sports. Yeah. You know, football is something that's really close to my heart. I grew up with it. I'm from a really small town in Nebraska. My mom loves football. So I promised myself that I would explore all the sports. And what happened was that I met someone. He was an NFL official, and his name is Jeff Triplett. And there was just something about him, and I just kind of ended up hanging out like at his table during this award ceremony, and there's all these NFL guys, and it just felt like home to me. And as a first time documentary filmmaker, I really needed a comfort place because I was entering a culture that I didn't know anything about. So football and being on the field was a comforting place for me to start. And then that's how I ended up filming women football referees. Wow.
So this is your first documentary, huh?
That is correct.
That's cool. That's great.
It's cool now, but it wasn't cool when,
not sure what
when I was trying to figure out how to turn the camera on.
Sure.
So, yeah. You know, it just has been like an incredible experience.
So when that's after that first like thought of, and like you said, you had an open mind of making a documentary on any sport, but mm-hmm. once you came to the conclusion of football, how did all the other players get involved?
Well, honestly, it's such a unique culture that I was such an outsider, and I knew that, and I wanted to honor that space. I just wanted to learn everything I could because I didn't want to be seen as a threat. And what happened was that I spent a whole year really just trying to figure out who the women are doing this, and then reaching out to those women and letting them know who I am. And that took quite a while to do that. And interesting enough, I found Tangela Mitchell on LinkedIn, and I just recently found the original message I sent to her. And it was awesome. She was really open to me. She like had a great conversation with me on the phone. And I just remember after the first time talking with her, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to film her. This is amazing. But it'd be one more year out until I got on the field with her. And then when I was at the Harold Mitchell football officiating camp, that's okay. where I met Anise, and I had read about her. I had heard about her, and meeting her and filming her during that football officiating camp was just really, it just was kind of meant to be. And then with Mary Podesta, I met her through Mike Burton, who I adore. He is like,
yeah, great person.
A teddy bear. Like,
yes. We're going to tell him that.
Just amazing. And I met Mike Burton through Cindy Wilson. Okay. So it kind of, you know, it becomes a really small community once you start kind of getting introduced to people and meeting people. And then when I started filming the three women, I was like, this is a beautiful story because it's really all about what it's like on and off the field, and they have their own unique kind of perspective.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's great. So, Dean, how'd you get involved? You talked a little bit about, but how did you go from you know, Chantel with this idea to, you know, getting involved?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this the other day, Chantel, and I don't remember the exact moment, but it was really through Anise and Chantel and I. I think Chantel reached out to me about the documentary and what she was doing. And again, like I said, it was something that I'm really passionate about. Someone coming from, you know, I became part of this officiating world, but I never officiated. I didn't grow up in an officiating family. I didn't officiate on the field, but the officiating community took me in, and I was always grateful for that. And so whenever I saw people that were struggling to whether that was to get in officiating or to advance or to reach their goals, that really hit home for me. And so this story, and just knowing what Anise, I don't think we really, you know, Anise is not going to necessarily, you know, kind of toot her own horn, but she was the first female official in the NCAA, and she was the only female official for a long time. And think about how hard it is to officiate and how lonely that can feel for men officiating. And to be the only female, that was, and then to become an NFL scout, it's just extraordinary what she's done and what Chantel has done with this documentary and telling this story about these amazing women. It's just something that I knew I had to be a part of.
That's great. Well said.
Yeah, I mean, commend you for doing that. Yeah.
I was thinking about that the other day, and it was Anise who connected Dean and I. Somehow Anise was like, you got to talk to this Dean Blandino guy. And I was like, I don't know about that. So I was like, his opinion meant so much to me. And I was, you know, as a first time rookie, I was like, I don't think I'm going to send it to him. And Anise was sending me text messages saying, did you send it to him? Did you send it to him? So I finally caved in and I did. And, you know, a week later we were on the phone and it was awesome. You know, I was talking to a couple other people to be the executive producers, and really just when I got connected to Dean, I was like, yeah, he's the one. So that's all, it all goes back to Anise.
Well, with that, this is a perfect lead in because
Well, I'll say this. Basically, Dean has been there all the time. And when we met Chantel, I think I met you, Chantel, about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
At Harold Mitchell's. And you were talking in terms about, oh, my God, you know, women. And then they were telling her, well, and this is the first thing, you know, I never really look at myself in that, because at the time when I did come in, I came in, you know, totally from something totally different, dealing with something different. Battling cancer at the time, but Dean has always been there for the ladies, and you know, we just needed an outlet, I guess, because we were trying to figure out what can we do basically to move the women, and it's always been him in terms of whatever he can do, he would help. So Chantel, when I was talking to her and she was like, well, I need a producer, whatever, and this is not working, I said, well, I know someone who's always, I don't care when we pick up that phone, whatever we've asked, since I started talking to Dean about women in officiating, and that's been his, you know, whole thing, how do we expand this? Because it's moving towards that in the future. And then I said, why don't you call Dean Blandino? And she was like, well, no. I said, listen, he always says, he always is a man of his word that I know of, and I don't know any different. And I said, the thing about it is, he said, if it's anything that I can do to help, feel free to call me. And so I said, are you sure? I said, can I have your number? He gave me the number. I said, can I give your number out? Sure, you can. You know, so I'm like, wow, as busy as he is and being in the NFL at the time, supervising of officials and, you know, whatever he was at the time in the NFL, you know, Dean did not hesitate whenever I asked him, or call him, you know, he gets back. And then I said to Chantel, listen, if he said it, he's going to do it, because there is nothing that I have not asked him that he has not done, and he has been a man of his word. And so she was pondering, and no. And then I said, call him. And she called me back a week later and said, oh my gosh, that's the best thing that could ever happen. I said, listen, one thing about it is, he said it, he's going to do it. You may not always get it within 24 hours or 48 hours. And I'm one of those that believe in timing. Timing is everything. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be right away, but long as it's in the process, and I think it's in the process, then, hey, he is going to get back with you. He's going to do what he said he's going to do. And here we are today, you know, with her. And this is what Dean has always talked about in helping females, and he has been on board ever since.
Wow. Yeah, that's great.
Right. And so, I mean, with the way you put that, I mean, just Dean, the example is proven again that majority of officials around the country or around the world, for that matter, if you ask them for help, they're willing to do that. And that's just another testament to that. And that's great to hear. Anise, can you do us one favor, please? Could you tell us a little bit about your journey of getting to the NCAA and where you're at now? I mean, because we always talk to the people that we have on and how they got to starting from Saturday mornings, fifth graders, all the way to wherever they got. And we always like to hear that. So if you could do that real quick, that would be awesome.
Sure. 1994, I started officiating in high school. The only reason I started officiating, I mean, I've always been a sports fanatic in any sports. I love sports. But officiating happened to choose me through a uncle of mine in high school who was a commissioner.
Okay.
How? Because I was battling cancer. So by me battling cancer, he thought this would be ideal for me to get out and be able to breathe and not focus on myself and what I was going through. Mm. And I was like, well, I'm not going to do this. So long story short, I went to a football association meeting for high school, went in, I just sat in the back of the room. I didn't think I was going to join. I was just trying to appease him because he had suggested that. And so by me doing that, I sat back and I said, no, I'm not going to put my name. They had a roster. You put your name on, and within 2 weeks after that, if you're serious, your name is on the roster, and then they'll call the roll. Well, after that, I went to two more meetings. My name was on the roll. When they called my name, they said, Anise Kay. So when they called my name, the room went totally quiet, extremely quiet. And I think it was about 150 men in there. And so the guy that called my name, he says, Anise Kennedy, that's a girl's name. So then I stood up. He said, would you stand up? Of course I stood up. And so his thing was, okay, I thought she was one of the wives here with your husband. I said, wow. You thought I was one of the wives? I said, no, sir. So then he said, are you serious? So when I said that, about five men in the association, some of the old good old boys back at the time, they were older too. And they should have been sitting, they should have been just out training. But of course, they were still on the field. And of course, they turned around, all five of them, they looked at each other and they said, we're not officiating with a female on a field. Yeah. Well, by me battling cancer at that time, and of course, I really didn't really want to be there, but I was doing it because my uncle said, you know, get your mind.
Yeah.
That was my battle. But that was not only my battle for getting on a field, but it was my battle that got me through cancer, because when they said that, I said then, I didn't know what to say. I think I was lost for words. And then I said, well, you must be leaving because I'm here to stay. And that was the journey on to high school. And, you know, I battled three different cancers for 10 years straight.
Wow.
And so while I was battling cancer, I was working on a football field. There were no women. That was in the 90s. And can you imagine? I look at all the transitions from that time till today. I look at the women and I say, you couldn't have even thought about standing up to the things that I went through on field. I mean, guys attacking me verbally. I would sit there and not say anything and smile it off. One coach asked, why are you smiling? I said, sir, I could be under the same soil that we're standing on, dead and gone, but I'm here and I get to hear your ignorance. So it went on from there. And in 1999, that was my last bout of cancer. I had to learn to walk all over again for a year and a half. I had crawled like a baby. And once I got back on my feet, I said, I would not do high school anymore. And I asked my uncle, could he connect me to college? And the story went from there. I got in touch with Johnny Greer, NFL Johnny Greer. He was the supervisor of the MEAC conference. He pulled me in, and I mean, I didn't even think I was going to get pulled in. I was huge, you know? Yeah. And that was the door opener. In 2000, I became the first female NC2A football official, Division I, 2A.
Wow. 2000.
Great story.
Yeah, great story. And what are you doing today? What's your role
today?
Yeah.
Basically, I am steady recruiting because from 2000 to 2011, I was on the football field. 2005, that was when I got the coach to play job in the NFL. And I think that was around the time exactly I met Dean, because they had a Martin Luther King program in New York. At that time, it was Manhattan, in the Manhattan. Wasn't it Dean in the Manhattan? They were in the old building at that time. And I met Dean. And I never forgot his face, because he was always smiles, just the most congenial. I mean, you got to meet Dean. Everybody got to meet him. I want to introduce him to the world, but I'm not willing to share him. But okay. But anyway, I met Dean, and from there, I did the coach to play 2005, and I was on the field. And then from there, you know, I got off the field. My mom was battling dementia, whatever. That took me off the field. And so then I started scouting as well. So I started doing coach to play scouting. And then after that, I said to myself, I need to do something to help females, because here it is, 2000. 12, 13, 14, and it's still not women out there, and I know they're out there, and I need to do something to give back. Yep. So I started going around the country asking different people about women, and I guess we have about 77 women today.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. Well, there's a lot of amazing points to that story, the amount of time it has taken to get to those numbers. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of in just pockets of the country, right? So if you go to some parts of the country, you'll see more female official, but other parts, you'll see hardly any still. So there's still.
Can I interject something here with that?
Sure.
2002, let's put it like this. 1994, my start,
yep,
to 2019, and there's still, you know, people not knowing there are females out there. Well, although we have 77, with, you know, like you said, certain parts, there are no women. I mean, still to this day, when someone sees a female official, it's almost like, wow, you know, like a Sarah Thomas on the NFL field. People like, wow, it's the lady. She's been there going on 5 years, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of crazy, because I look at it from 94 to 2019, my collegium from 2000 to 2019. And I'm like, okay, we got to find a way to really get this out here, you know. And I think Chantel did the greatest thing. That was the greatest meet, you know, someone wanting to do a documentary on women. And then Dean, this is always, you know, from day one with him. I mean, like I told people, they're like, oh, Mr. Blandino, he's this. I'm like, one thing I like about him, I love about him, it's not always about you got to have the experience. It's about giving opportunities. So between experience and opportunities, he's there. And it's not about whether you're going to fail or whether you can't do or can do the job. Every job you go on, they train you. So he didn't have a problem. He wasn't afraid to give the opportunity. And so this helped push the women up more and more. It's given us more avenues than we ever thought or could imagine. And between he and Chantel, this is, I mean, probably the greatest thing that can get out there.
Yeah. That's so good. That's awesome. It seems to me like you all have become more like a family, pretty close, the way you talk about each other.
Yeah.
You all become, imagine, pretty close.
I think we're stuck with each other. How about that?
Yeah, they can't get away from me anyway. So, yes, we are.
And it's interesting you say that, because when Dean was talking about how the officiating community kind of, not adopted him, but kind of took him in, I feel the exact same way, because you kind of just become part of this really kind of intimate group of you know, you're under a lot of pressure when you're on the field, and it's very similar in documentary work. I mean, you just really have one chance to get the shot, and that's it. I mean, either you get it or you don't. And every film shoot is different. Every location is different. Every interview is different. Everything is different. And there's a lot of factors you don't have control over. Like, you have no control. So for me, the fact that these women let me film them, and this was my first go, I was so appreciative of that. And you kind of create these really intimate bonds, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm on the field with them. I'm in the locker room with them. I'm staying with them in hotel rooms, because at the time of filming, I was on a shoestring budget. So I would stay with Tangela, and she, you know, was so generous that way. And I'm, you know, with Mary Podesta, I flew out last summer and filmed her and her family, and she was officiating some of the practices with the 49ers. I mean, you just create these bonds. And, yeah, you know, over the past 3 or 4 years, so much has gone on in my life on a personal level. And it's the officiating community that has been there for me.
Wow.
I mean, they're the ones texting and calling me and asking me how I'm doing. And so it's just was just a really unique and special experience to do this as a first time director and producer. So I will be forever grateful to the community.
And Gene is not going to toot his own horn either. Let me tell you, Mr. Blandino is very low key. He's always helping. He's always that person that's helping, and you don't know how you got there, but you got there. Yeah. He's not going to toot his horn. He's not. He's just going to be there to help. If you say Dean, he's there. But, yeah, you know,
we love that. I guess this question is for Dean. Can you talk about a little bit about why do you think this documentary is important, and then also some changes you still like to see regarding female officials particularly in NCAA football?
Well, yeah, I think this documentary is so important because I think it will shine a spotlight on the fact that there are women officiating football. And I don't know how many people and how many young women even know that that's a career path. Mm-hmm. And because football is not a sport that is played by women on a level like whether basketball or softball or things like that, I think this will shine a spotlight on that. And also some of the issues that female officials go through. We had a phone call that Anise was a part of going back a couple of years with some female officials, just wanted to get a cross section of women that were officiating and hear, you know, some of the issues. And it was just me, and we probably had 8 or 9 female officials on the call, including Anise. And it was a very honest and open and sometimes raw conversation about some of the challenges that they face that we don't understand. That we don't, whether it's to just not being able to get a uniform that fits correctly so that I'm comfortable on the football field and can move around and be in position, to places, to change, to harassment. And it was eye-opening for me. And I think, look, and this isn't to highlight the negative, because there's so much positive in officiating. You guys know, because you do it. It's a community. It's a family. We've become a family. But I think this will help highlight just that there are female officials that are working and trying to advance and trying to do the best they can. And we need to continue to create a pipeline at the grassroots level. And because for Anise to be the first one in 2000, and we've made progress, but we still only have roughly 75, 76 women officiating in the NCAA. That's not enough.
No.
That's not enough.
Yeah.
And so we have to create that pipeline and get on the grassroots level, get people interested, and just create that inclusive pipeline of officials, and because that inclusiveness is going to benefit all of us.
Yeah,
I liked how you said that. You know, anywhere from uniforms to changing areas.
Yeah.
You know, I help put this little group of volunteers together for this local university that puts on a passing camp tournament every summer. And you literally have to put out these other information ideas like, okay, listen, I need to know XYZ parking, entrance areas. Do you have an area that that the females can get changed? And because they don't, a lot of them don't plan it. They don't know this, right? So yeah. Education by just purely stating it and going through it helps, it grows. Yeah. The other thing we always talk about too is changing terms, right? 8-person mechanic,
yes.
7-person mm-hmm. mechanic, yes. All these little terms that are growing this whole avocation to make it where it's we're just people out there,
yeah.
And it's not a him or a her, it's just us. And that's where I think that most of the work is great. And I'm glad you kind of brought that up.
Yeah. One point I want to make, you talked about, you know, people not knowing there are NCAA officials mm-hmm. that are female out there. And it reminded me of last year I was at a game and we were walking and my back judge was a female, and we were walking. You had to go kind of through the crowd from the locker room to the field. And these three little girls were standing on the side.
Yeah.
And when she walked by, their eyes just lit up. Yeah. I can see their faces now. Just like a knowing kind of look saying, you know, wow, there's a female official. Yep, something I could do someday.
I could do that. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So that was great.
And you know what? That was when I started. I mean, it's just like yesterday when I went on the field and, you know, it was almost like, if they were amazed, it was a female. And I mean, I'm standing there and it was just like, I mean, my people were starstruck and frozen because to see a female on a field. And Kimberly and I talked about this earlier in terms of how can we get more, you know, get it out there from little girls for their dreams, to let them know, you know, they can do it or whatever. I think there's one thing that came into mind when, you know, we were talking. Here we are, we have female officials out there, you know, like Dean said, 77 is not enough, mm-hmm. you know. And so that's why it seems like in spurts across the country. And when I became an official, it was more like it was one me and they were threatened by that. And I'm like, one me? But I mean, I'm saying to myself, why? But at the same time, here it is, the appearance thing. I look like a female because I can wear my hair in a ponytail and a bun. Well, the thing is now, and we didn't have any guys. We went to the military to find out how women, you know, look, you know, because you can't take your cap off, and you know, they don't take the cap off when they're doing the national anthem. The women got to put their hair back up. So the military had a uniform to wear. You put a bun in your head, you know, tight ponytail bun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so we just did that. And that was something I took upon myself because I didn't want to look like some, you know, hair up under cap. What was the fitting way? And the military way was the fitting way. Well, when I look at it today, here we are. And after I left the field, things changed. So now look at it this way. I'll tell you one reason why you don't know women are really out there, because now the women are pushing their hair up under the cap like the men.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the women have their hair pushed up under the cap like a man, who knows the difference? But yet we're hiring female officials. So if we're hiring female officials, they need to look like female officials. They need to be who they are. And so the hair is under there. It's Mary. Right. I call Mary because I looked at her in a game.
Uh-huh.
And this is the thing right here. Here it is. You go out there, you uniform. And I have to let you all know that Dean is responsible for the first female on his watch to be in the NFL, on an NFL field. See, this is what I mean by he doesn't toot his horn.
Yeah.
But then when I look at it, we haven't made protocols for women in terms, you know, coming up on levels. We want them to push their hair up under the cap. But when we're doing scouting, here's the thing. We can't get past your appearance. So now, if I can't get past your appearance, then, you know, how do I even look at you as an official? I looked at Mary. After about 3 hours in a game, Mary's hair was falling from under the cap. Now Mary looks like, oh, my God, you know, her hair is falling from under the cap. She's looking like she's been in a fight, because that's what it becomes if you really look at the appearance part of it.
Right.
scared. I said, Mary, look at yourself and then look at the men on the field. Well, the men still look sharp and tight. Of course, you're sweaty out there,
right,
but your hair isn't falling from anywhere. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's when Dean was talking about the difference. And, you know, we did the hardcore talking, whatever, you know, I can tell Dean anything. And, you know, it's with me and Dean. But at the same time, he understood. And a lot of official conference supervisors and whatever still don't understand that. But if you're looking for your officials to have a great appearance, if you're hiring women on the field, then something about it should be a woman on the field, because how do the little girls who wish they can do this get to know there's a female on the field?
Right.
All they see is all men on the field, and they don't see it until what you just said. I think it was Dwayne. I'm not sure if it was Dean. Dwayne was talking.
Yeah.
But at the thing, when they see you pass, they have to see you coming off the field close up and realize, oh, my God, there was a female. You know, so
and
something there has to be, you know, worked out in a protocol for what we have for females in terms we, you know, where we have that military bond where we can see. Because I want this to expand for all little girls on up to, you know, up to age, you know, where they can say, I wanted to do that. I want, because they don't know they can do that. They still don't know they can do that. Not even little girls, girls in high school, girls in college, still don't know they can do that. They can officiate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Some good points. I mean, yeah, if I'm a little, I'm going to say I'm a little girl, but I can imagine a little girl, even if they saw you and they knew you were a female, they're thinking, do I have to change my appearance or who I am
to
officiate football? Right. So,
and you like the point you bring up about Mary, you know, after 3 hours of running around the field and her, and maybe some of her hair is falling out of the, you know, you can make that correlation, because you're trying to make a correlation that the men still look sharp. Well, you put the same correlation of the a person's shirt coming untucked.
Yeah.
So that's that correlation I think you're trying to make. And how can you leave that? You know, like my daughter, she's in ballet. She put that low bun on the bottom of your hat, right at the base of your neck, and the hat stays out. The bun stays outside the hat, and then there you go. But great points all around.
Sure. Well, I think it's really important just to note, you know, when I was interviewing women officials across all sports, I would say, you know, how did you, you know, what inspired you, you know, to become an official referee? And they'd say, because I saw her.
Mm.
And, you know, in Anissa's case, there was no one else for her to see. And I think that's really, really important to make note of, that that's why Anissa was the first and the trailblazer, but she didn't see somebody else doing it like her.
Mm. Yeah, and
absolutely. I had no one to look up to.
I mean, people will say they're so specific in the moment that they know that become an official, they want to do it. They say the exact game, they say exact date, time, and they say who they saw. And the fact that I saw Terry, I saw Sabrina Brunson, or they see a clip of them on some video, and then they're sold. Then they want to do it.
Yeah. So I can tell already we're going to have Anise back on.
Mm-hmm.
On a solo and just get some more thoughts from her, because she has some great stuff there going on.
Well, I tell you what, when I look at that, Dean can share a whole lot more, because Dean, I never thought about it.
But Anise, you have a way with words that I can never, ever attain. You have a way that I can't do it. So you have to do your own little thing with these guys.
Oh, yeah. He's letting me. I cannot leave. I'm still under. No, I'm just,
we want to hear from you.
I know. And you know what I think of? And when I was talking, I thought about the Sarah Thomas when I made the mention.
Mm-hmm.
I never even thought about it until we were just talking. Under Dean, this happened. It didn't happen under anybody else. It happened under Dean Blandino.
Yep.
So this just hit me, and he and I never talked about it because it just hit me. Because I try to talk about everything I think I can talk about when I come to him. But you think about it. So you know this has been a long time thing, and it's just trying to find a way to expand it. Because like you said, when the women, and we still have it, the women are not getting locker rooms. They're in a bathroom. So, yeah. You know, it's yeah. just the protocol of things. And I think it's just really stopping to address and someone, you know, sitting down, whether it's the NC2A started up with it or whomever, just saying, hey, we got to have a, you know, the starting point can't keep being a jump aerobics type thing. Every time a female come in, you know, it just starts and then it never goes anywhere. We have to be progressive in where we are and keep progressing from where we are today.
Chantel, could you talk about the current status of the documentary?
So where we're at right now is that we're officially selected for two film festivals, the Artemis Women in Action Film Festival and the Riverside Short Film Festival. We have also submitted Her Turf to about 70 other film festivals that we'll start hearing back from. And then once we get selected into more film festivals, our goal is to continue the journey through our GoFundMe campaign to make sure that the women that we film can go to these film festivals and do Q&A and panel discussions.
Got it.
Yeah. So we'll put your GoFundMe information in the show notes on this podcast
and the festivals that
and the festivals you mentioned.
There's one thing I want to just mention about our GoFundMe campaign. Yep. So the GoFundMe campaign is really about all women in officiating. I mean, these three women that I filmed have the opportunity to showcase and share their stories about why they're official and what it's about being on and off the field. Mm-hmm. For me, it's really kind of, you know, putting the word out there about not only are they doing this, but there are other women out there doing this. So by contributing to our GoFundMe campaign, you're really contributing to all the women in officiating.
That's great. Yeah. And like we said, we'll get that information out in a number of ways, either on Twitter, our Twitter account, an email, and through the website. So
thank you.
Yeah.
Dean.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Any final thoughts?
Yeah, Sure. Well, I think we were talking a little bit, and Anise was talking about the power of women in officiating. And I don't think, you know, I go through my own experience with Sarah Thomas, who was the first full-time female official in the NFL. And Sarah, you know, Sarah's goal was to be an official. It wasn't to be the first female official. It wasn't. I had so many conversations with her about it. And she was kind of the face when she became came to the NFL, she became the face for women officiating, and it wasn't something that she was necessarily looking for. And we had this conversation that whether you like it or not, you are a role model for young women and girls that they'll see you now and say, wow, I can get to the NFL. Mm-hmm. And that's the power. It's the power that you can do whatever you want. There's no boundaries. There's no ceilings. There's nothing that can stop you. I think that's the power when you see when those girls would see Anise as the first NCAA official and then Sarah in the NFL. And I think that's what's so amazing about what these women are doing. You know, they just, you know, I just read that the Bucks just hired two female assistant coaches just today. Bruce Arians just announced that. So we're seeing women coaching, officiating. There's going to be a time we're going to see them playing. So it's just, again, the power is that when you have young people and they see people like Anise and Sarah and Tangela and Mary, then they say, you know what? There's nothing I can't accomplish. And I think that's what it comes down to.
That's well said.
Yeah.
Chantel, I have another question regarding what's next for you or this whole project. Do you have something in mind following this documentary? What's next for you?
Well, the long-term plan is to launch it into a docuseries so we can continue the conversation. Mm-hmm. And what I find most interesting that whether you're into football or, you know, really focused on women initiatives, just the different folks that have watched the documentary so far have had just a really kind of intimate response to it. I just recently watched it on the big screen for the first time, and I was blown away. And a couple of my mom's friends were there and they were laughing and crying, and they are not football. They don't know anything about football or anything about officiating, but it was really these three stories about these extraordinary women, you know, Anise being the trailblazer, Mary Podesta's story is about the love of the game, and then Tangela Mitchell, her story is about what it's like to be an official and like more of the behind the scenes. And our hope is, and our goal is with the film festivals and getting into the, into that arena, is attracting networks to come and work with us in, and work this into some type of a series, because there are so many other stories that need to be heard and shared.
That's awesome.
That's great. I mean, love to see that.
Yeah. I mean, Amazon, Netflix, somebody's got to
somewhere. Yeah.
That would be really cool to see something like that. So
I mean, don't you guys
have to make you say that.
Don't you? Shouldn't I? My dream job is just to follow Anise around. Like, be, I could be her entourage.
It would not be.
Amen. Yeah, you know, they talk about, they talk about me all the time. They always say you're a straight shooter or whatever. I don't. I mean, that's just me. This is me 24/7. So wherever I am, they like, you just say it like that. You don't have no ear filling the way you say it. I said, no, we have to be truthful, but we have to be loving in the truth. And to question myself, asking what more can I do? How can I help somebody? And then Dean popped up out of Jack in the Box. And when he popped up out of Jack in the Box, God said, that's him, you know. And I don't care what, he made a way. And I can tell you, and I can't even begin, I mean, it's not wagging the tail or whatever. Within 2 months, I asked Dean to do something to help us with the women. And when I tell you, in those 2 months, he made a huge difference and more women came in. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Women couldn't get to camps, you know, didn't have money to get there. They wanted to know what was the next phase, because women don't know what steps to take, because nobody's really feeding us with that. Right. And when I went to Dean, Dean just said, hey, who needs to go? Send me a list. You know, and Dean, I have to thank you while we're here. Because after that, we got 25 more ladies that came into associations, end up getting in on conference. And just because of what Dean did, because like you said, when women saw other women, saw women coming off fields, and they couldn't believe it. And next thing you know, these ladies started officiating, and they just started booming, you know. So I'm just saying, we can't take light of any of this, because it is what it is, but we have to always say and give, you know, kudos to those who are really making things happen, even though he's behind the scenes. He would never say or whatever. He's just there, you know, we get him. But I have to put that out there, because if it had not been for him, the 25 that came in, and just think of the 25 that are coming off of them, you know? Yeah. So it's great.
Yeah, it'll compound.
It will. Yeah,
so it sounds like this little group of people was a match.
It's meant to happen.
Right, yeah. So this is really great.
Yeah, document. I think we should probably end on that. That's just a great kind of. Yes,
it's a great ending. So let's
punctuation on.
Well, yeah, we'll reverse this real quick. So well said comments all around this whole conversation. This was something that we've been searching for, as far as to get the perspective of a female for 40 episodes. This is the 40th one we've done. And I'm telling you, from my perspective, this will be fun to produce this the rest of the way. I've enjoyed every minute of this. Truthfully, I have daughters and...
so do I.
Yeah, so... This has been really eye-opening and fun, and I have not got to work with Mary yet. I hope to someday.
I have.
She's Dwayne has, but I have not. We just haven't been paired up yet. Mr. Burton hasn't given us that opportunity. But anyways, thank you, all of you that came on and shared this story.
Yeah, shout out to Kimberly too. She's not on, but
I'm on. Thank you so much.
Behind the scenes there, but PR.
Hey guys.
But thank you for your help with this. And thank the rest of you for taking time to come on and just kind of getting the word out about this this documentary, I think, is very important, and just the movement in itself. So, and your efforts, not just on this podcast, but, you know, all you're doing. Yep. And so this will be our most impactful episode yet. So.
And so if any other festival information comes out or to you, I mean, forward it to us and we'll help promote that as well as they come along, if you could.
Yeah.
And with that, thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And good luck with the rest of it. Yeah.
So good luck with the future. Good luck with the festivals and the film. And hopefully there'll be a docuseries that will show up.
Yes.
And we all.
Absolutely. With Chantel and Jean, what can we say? We can do mountains.
No, yes. Thank you.
Thanks, all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, if you're not blown away by that, I don't know
where
your heart beats at.
Yeah.
That was pretty intense.
Yeah. You know, at the very least, I hope it, you know, gives you another perspective.
Yes.
It gives you that female official perspective somewhat. I mean, we're mostly talking about the documentary, mm-hmm. but we got into some details.
Yeah.
We'll almost definitely get more females on. So we can get their perspective, not just on this, but just, you know,
in general, film
stuff, stuff like that. Yeah.
Right.
So very, very cool that this is going on, and just to get the inside story, how Dean Blandino had a huge part in women getting into officiating at higher levels, and Anissa's story. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
How incredible is that?
I mean, I'll put it this way. This is how I look at this.
Yeah.
We've all kicked something out there.
Yeah.
On the football field. We've kicked something. If you haven't, you're lying or it's coming. It's like we talk about IW. Yep. And you feel how you feel at that moment inside.
Yeah.
Could you imagine when Anise first got on that field?
Yep.
That feeling could easily be there.
The entire time. Yeah.
And I have no idea what that's like.
I can't. I mean, I could somewhat imagine it. I can't. Being the first, you're not getting the support from the people around you.
Yes.
That's supposed to be in your corner.
That's it. That's what I'm getting at. Yeah.
Yeah.
You.
Because I say this all the time, right? Well, we say this all the time is like, I'm good on the field with coaches yelling at me as long as the other seven people or six people are cool with me, right? Mm-hmm. They got my back, they're supporting me,
right,
and that sort of thing.
Right.
But so imagine not having that
right
and trying to do this.
Everybody's against you.
Yeah.
So that is the definition of trailblazer, as we heard on the show.
Yes.
Very commendable, very inspiring.
Yes.
But I agree with what she said is, you know, it's been 2000 she got in.
Yeah.
And it's 2019 and there's only 74, I think they said.
77?
70, somewhere in the 70s female officials on the field. It's still not enough. So hopefully what they're doing will help grow that. And
I bet there's that number is the concentration of that number is in just a few conferences.
Sure.
Yeah. So still a lot of work to be done.
Right. So,
I want to get the website out real quick.
Yep.
Their website is herturf.com, herturf.com. And they have all the information on there. But we'll also put in the show notes and
all their information.
Yeah, all their information. So,
I hope you enjoyed that.
Go out there and support them.
Yes, please. Dwayne.
Support us, I should say. They're one of us.
Yeah, they are one of us. We're all together in this, right?
Yeah, we're all together.
That says?
We're all in this together.
Got to get that slogan in there. Okay, another good one.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it as well.
Okay, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.